Hi, I'm Philip Hong, and welcome to another edition of The Best of Humble and Fred, brought to you by FYI Music News, Strain Print, The Retirement Sherpa, The Chambers Plan, HomegrownKits.ca, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Gig Sky. And today is an unconventional edition of The Humble and Fred Best Of, because we're also featuring some great chat, along with the interviews you'll know and love. And so let's start with a couple of archive segments. Let's start with a chat on untimely deaths, big heads, and droopy ears.
I'm not sure if he would mind. It struck me because a friend of ours, his brother, died a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. And it's sad. I don't know him, his brother, I mean. But the reason I wanted to bring it up is, you know, that thing where, you know, somebody your age dies.
Oh, yeah.
and not to make light of it, because there's nothing, you know, nothing sadder than an untimely death. I think you said that yesterday. But, you know, when one gets to a certain age, one is aware of one's mortality. Mm-hmm. And how old are you?
30 this year.
Are you going to be 30 when?
Yes, in November. But I have seen two of my cohorts die in the past 2 years. One in a motorcycle accident in Laos, and the other actually died... He died before graduating from college.
Seriously?
Yes.
Did you know, when I was in high school, I only knew of one person that died, and it was after high school. It was the summer after grade 12, and he was a really great guy. You know, sort of one of those kind of class valedictorian type of students, really smart, was going to go mm-hmm. off and be something great, mm-hmm. and popped the clutch on a tractor cutting the grass in the median on the highway, mm-hmm. and as he was going up the rise, he popped the clutch and literally popped the tractor on top of himself and died. Mm. Those things happen mm-hmm. in the farming communities.
Yes.
The point I'm trying to make, though, is that in your 20s and 30s, mm-hmm. even into your 40s, you know, you don't really know a lot of people that die.
Right.
You know, I was unusual because I was 34 when my mother died, but you know, after that, it wasn't until my mid-40s that my father passed away. The point is, when you get into your 50s, everybody starts dying. I think it's really one of the reasons that people go through a midlife crisis. I say that in quotations, because part of it is facing your imminent mortality. And when you're 30, like, you know, people, I remember coming up to 30 years old and thinking, oh, you're going to turn 30, like it was a big deal. And you just passed 60. And my older brother's going to be 66 this year. Mm-hmm. And so this friend of ours, whose brother passed away at 57, mm. I'm about to turn 58 in 2 weeks. How weird is all that?
No, I know.
Mister?
Well, my brother will be 68 this September.
How old is Nancy, your sister?
She's 1952, so she's 65. She'll be 66.
Well, no, I just thought, because it's interesting, your family, your siblings, are around the same age older than you as mine are.
Right. The thing is about my brother, he's going to be 68, and that was the age of my grandfather when he died, and that was my first, I was only 11, but that was my first introduction to death, trying to get your head around it. I'm 11 years old, and Papa's dead, and it's like, at 11, you know what death is, but you don't fully appreciate what's attached to a death. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden you see your grandmother mourning and your mom sad and all those things. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point being, my brother's going to be 68, who's fine. You know, he's good. But I was thinking about that the other day. That's how old Papa was when he died. And it's like, when Papa died, he was this old man. He was the old grandfather. Now that's going to be my brother and me in a few years.
I'm actually older. No, that's not true. My mother was 66. I'm older than she was when she was diagnosed, though. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother was diagnosed with early onset, like really early onset Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And she was, I could do the math, but probably 52 or 3. Mm-hmm. Certainly by 55, you know, we all knew there was a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, we knew there was a problem about me a long time ago, too.
Early onset.
Early onset. Blism. Early onset. But I've done some thinking about this, as you can tell, and I think that's part of what freaks people out as they age, because, you know, at Phil's stage in life, you know, really very few people in the celebrity world and very few people in your family world. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a time in your life, probably into your teens and early 20s, when everybody you know, mm-hmm. aunts, uncles, papas, grandparents, all that stuff. At one point, everyone I knew was alive. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw a picture the other day of my, at the age I was when I was bar mitzvahed in Moose Jaw, 13 years old, and it's a shot of my brothers and my mom and dad and my grandmother and some aunts and uncles and some cousins, and everyone in that picture is dead except my brothers and I, because I had a couple cousins that died, our really close cousins, like guys our age. They died, their parents died, my parents are dead.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people dead, Phil.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. Yeah, it's funny you say that, because just the other day I was looking at a picture, too. I was on my nephew's Facebook page, and there was a picture. I think I was 31. They were living in Rockwood at the time, and there's a picture, a great family picture of a bunch of people, and I just, and half the group is gone.
Mm-hmm.
They were old. I mean, they're older. It was nothing untimely or super tragic, but... Yeah, it's just, you could just take half that picture and eliminate the people. But that's life. That's the way it goes. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, fate is a weird thing. Like, you know how some people have their heart attacks at a certain age and all that? And my dad's brother, my dad's actually very scared at the moment, because mm-hmm. his youngest brother, who is about 5 years younger than him, he's just had his second heart attack in 3 years.
I'm sorry, your father's your uncle?
Right, my second uncle's.
And how old is he?
He's a 59 or 60. So, because my dad's 68 this year. So,
and he had a heart attack.
He had his second heart attack in 3 years. He's accumulated a lot of wealth. He's had a very good life. And then, you know, he's a lanky dude, too. He's half my size. But he somehow had two heart attacks mm-hmm. in a row.
Yeah, you know, you're...
It happens.
If you get to be our age and you don't have... Like, Fred and I are lucky. I mean, mm-hmm. think about it. Other than your... You know, wonky prostate. You know, you and I don't have heart disease mm-hmm. between us. We don't have diabetes, although you have a little history. I have a little history. My father, I definitely have the Alzheimer's mm-hmm. More of a proclivity than you, because it's in my family. But like, as we sit here and speak, you know, who knows? Maybe a year from now we'll look back and go, "Oh, that's right. That was before Howard developed eye cancer." Some. But
yeah,
we don't have heart. Like, a lot of men our age are at risk for heart attacks and uh-huh. strokes.
Yeah. And that's the key. That's why, you know, guys, don't go to doctors. But every once a year I go. And mm-hmm. as I said, the last time I went, I forced a heart. I wanted a heart checkup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as my doctor said, you know, the government, they're not big on just sending unless there's a problem. Well, isn't that counterproductive? I mean, they can't deny you. And I went and had the stress test and everything. I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of guys out there that, you know, they're ticking time bombs and have no idea.
I have my physical next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I at my request, it's like, okay, you know, it's time to check it out. Regularly at Shoppers Drug Mart. Mm-hmm. I go in and have my blood pressure.
Oh, in the machine thing,
right? Yes. It's funny, I forgot that my new friend,
mm-hmm.
new lady,
new
girlfriend, new friendly, new woman. We were in Shoppers Drug Mart getting some stuff for my kids before Christmas, and I said, come on, I'll challenge you to a blood pressure test.
Comparison.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Because and she was very good. We were within a couple points of each other, but, you know, 120 over 80 is... textbook, and I think I was like 122 over 84 or something. Mm. But you know, even that, you know, you and I don't have high blood pressure. We don't have high cholesterol. Mm-hmm. We, you know, I sometimes will look at the picture of you and I in our early 40s. We don't look much different in terms of our size. We're not way fat. We're not bloated. You know, we're just older, grayer, and a little bit wrinkly.
And I've been saying this to Delise lately in pictures and stuff. My head is getting bigger. That's one concern that I have.
Or is it the rest of you getting smaller?
No,
that might
I
be
don't.
A thing.
Nah, I don't know.
Optical illusion.
I think that's an old guy thing. My head looks bigger, and it just seems it's getting bigger.
Yeah.
And then there's concerns of water on the brain or pressure or whatever, but I don't know.
Well,
I'll have that checked out.
You and I are funny. I'm going to go to my doctor's next Monday. I also want a stress test and look inside my brain. I've showed you my ears.
What about?
Well, you know, it's a fact that as you age, you know, your nose keeps growing and your ears keep growing.
Oh.
But only one of mine is growing. Like.
Oh.
Yeah, one of them.
One of your ears is bigger than the
one
other.
One of my ears.
One of these ears is not like the other.
Which one is it? I can't. Is it this one that's a bigger one?
Yeah.
Like it's
bigger, is it, or it just leans out
more?
Well,
it's because I just had these headphones on. But right. One of them
right.
has taken a lead in the ear growth.
Oh, I noticed that.
Yeah.
But you don't notice that my head's getting bigger.
I don't know. To be honest with you, it always seemed pretty big to me.
No, I know. Did it?
No. No.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
We've got more from the Humble and Fred Lifestyle segment on the Best of Humble and Fred. First, I'm Philip Hong. Thank you very much for listening to the Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. We have a couple of very important incoming messages.
Well, if you want to use cannabis better, you better get StrainPrint. It is the companion app that will help you learn how much more rewarding and beneficial your experience with cannabis can be, whether it's for pain relief or just anxiety, or you just like to, you know, curl up on the couch. Make sure you go into the StrainPrint app. Download it on Google Play or Apple. And it's about sharing other people's experiences along with yours. StrainPrint.ca. Follow them on Twitter, Instagram, and all of it. And right now, if you sign up using the promo code HFRadio, get 100 extra bonus points to use in the StrainPrint app world. All sorts of little prizes and gifts. Learn which strain works best for you. Medical cannabis tracking app as well. And a medical cannabis journaling app. Lots of people are starting to get hip to the idea that it's not about the bud, the flower, and the vape. It's about the pain relief. You know, whether it's your father-in-law, my ex-mother-in-law, going through some treatments for some stuff, and there's pain. And sometimes, if you don't want to get involved in this world of opioids.
Yeah. Cannabinoids, man.
Cannabinoids.
For anti-inflammatory, especially.
This is Humble and Fred.
I'm Philip Hong. The Best of Humble and Fred on air and online continues with After Sex Smokes.
Am I dating myself? Breaking Bad references, but...
No, you're not.
Jesse Pinkton or whatever.
Yo, Mr. White.
Several times during the show leading up through the fourth seasons, you know, the After Sex Smoke. That's all we... Did you ever used to do that? Like, I just don't get that. Like, you're lying in bed.
Right.
You have nothing on your chest. You're laying with your head cocked and you're smoking a cigarette. 1,200 degrees at the end of it. Your bare chest. Like, smoke in the room.
Well, to answer
your
question.
Your mouth is already gummed up, probably.
To answer your question, yeah, many, many times in my life. Sat there, laid there in bed after. But again, it's not that cigarette's so much better than the one with coffee. Mm-hmm. It's just another... a few moments have gone by since you were allowed to have one. So it seems like... Ah.
Right. That, it just always... blew me away, because with a coffee, I could see it. With a beer, I could see it. Yes. With after a meal, I could see it.
But they're all the same cigarettes.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, given the location, the position of your body and like lying down having a smoke. It just, that one seems odd to me.
No, that's smoking odd. Naked. That well, sounds odd.
Also, remember there were there was a time when people smoked indoors, which also blows me away. You know, like imagine you're indoors, you're having relations, and then whilst being indoors, you reach over and light one up, and then you. Here's the other cool thing, sexy. You know, when you're trying to be sexy, you light it, and then you put it in your partner's, you know, mouth. I know you thought something else was coming, but you know, you do that for them, like, oh baby, you know.
Baby come on,
second dart.
Oh baby come on, baby come on, baby. Hey, you like some cigarettes?
Hey.
With me, it was awkward because I smoked a pipe, eh? Yeah,
but what if there had been? Some,
I had a corn cob pipe.
What if some oralties had taken place? The combination of that and cigarette smoke?
Listen,
without a little swirl of scope first?
Whatever.
What?
Whatever.
Am I overthinking?
When I used to smoke a pipe, I'd say, hey, baby, you want some pipe smoke?
Oh, and what's hanging? A corn cob pipe. I mean, I smoked a corn cob pipe.
Of course you did, Huck Finn.
As a novelty. And I've told you, my dad would wake up in the morning, get on his side, prop his head on his hand, and have a smoke before you even get out of bed.
So don't you think,
and that had nothing to do with sex because my parents never had sex.
Well, I was going to say, don't you think the night before when they were doing it, your dad leaned over and went, come on, June, have a smoke.
Hello.
I guarantee the one or two times in their life my mom and dad had sex, I guarantee they were smoking before, during, and after. Lou and Luba love their smokes.
It's like Casablanca every night.
My mom and dad.
Yeah, but who didn't back
they
then?
They love their smokes, man. They were, my brothers and I always say that we became smokers. It was our family business with that intention. But there was so much smoke in my childhood. I was probably addicted to cigarettes. I mean, I was addicted to nicotine without even knowing it. Now, you think about all the smoke in that house every day, all day in the car. Oh, they opened the window once in a while so I wouldn't die.
No, I know. A real social activity, too. Because it used to be, and Delise has never done this, and maybe people still do. The whole idea of the neighbor coming over in the evening to sit around the kitchen table and chat.
Yeah.
That used to happen all the time when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that was all around cigarettes, right? Mary Bully would knock at the door. She'd come in, sit at the kitchen table. Her and my mom, pot of tea, light up, and chat for the next 2 hours. But it was probably one smoke after another.
Oh, yeah.
It's just bizarre. Like, yeah, it's, I don't know. Do you see that nowadays? What, very few people smoke indoors. But.
Well, no one does. And who talks to their neighbors? I mean,
yeah, who'd want to?
I'm a neighbor.
Who are our neighbors?
Okay, Freddie, tattle along. It's a grown-up talk. That's what you used to say to me. Grown-up talk. Now, toodaloo, Freddie.
Shut I up. Remember at some age, probably just before double digits, like 8, 9, I remember feeling grown up because I would get to light my mom's cigarette, you know, I'd get to use the matches, or every once in a while I would go get her a cigarette. I was handling cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were all, David and I and Stephen were all destined to be smokers. And I think, my older brother doesn't smoke, but I think Stephen still smokes cigarettes.
Yeah.
Does Joe and Linda?
No.
Is that Linda, your sister?
No, Nancy never smoked.
Nancy's your sister, too?
Yeah.
What's Linda up to?
Who's Linda?
I have no idea.
I'd like to meet this Linda. I don't even have a cousin named Linda.
I always, listen, I forget. Nancy and Joe are your brother and sisters.
Yes.
Clyde and Linda are your...
No. There's no Linda.
Where's Linda? Why is Linda not being talked about?
Why
you've done
Linda?
Something with Linda.
I'm trying to think, Howard.
So your brother-in-law is Clyde. He doesn't smoke.
Imelda.
Ah.
No.
Is she friends with Linda?
No, she could have a friend, Linda, but okay. I'm not part of my world.
Somebody better be named Linda in this family. Do you feel comfortable?
Like, what? What's that?
Do you feel comfortable talking about what happened to Linda in your childhood?
You know, you mentioned, like, even now if somebody did smoke, the idea of getting a kid to light it, it would be like, you just don't do that.
Oh, I know.
Johnny Slapshot story. The other day, he's over. We're downstairs. We're playing hockey and everything. Mm-hmm. He notices on the table downstairs a bag of licorice all sorts. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at it, and he goes, Papa, can I have one? And I said, sure. And he likes the coconut ones. So I give him a couple of licorice all sorts, and Later on that evening, he's at home with his mom, and he's talking about, I love going to grandma, Nana, and Papa's, and Grandma always has nice little toys. I'll bought her him this Transformer thing. And Papa always gives me treats downstairs. Today, he gave me liquor. Mel said, what? He said, yeah, Papa gave me liquor today. And Mel said, that's odd. And then she remembered I had said, because I got to come clean, right? I'm not supposed to give him too many treats. And I had said, yeah, I'd give him some liquors, all sorts. So he said, then she said, oh, I had to explain to him then, you know, what he actually had and sort of teach him that term. She thought, because, well, you know, at school.
Going to school.
Something like, oh, my
Fred
Patterson gives me liquor.
likes to liquor me up at five.
It's the Georgetown way, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Papa gives me liquor.
I just, I feel bad, though, that he'll never know his great aunt Linda. Sweet boy.
Aww.
I was going to ask if you're comfortable. I probably should have asked you before we started the show about
talking about it's just so sad.
Well, we don't have to talk about it. We don't have to talk about the person.
No.
But it's a significant thing, and you know, we talk about a lot of things here on the show that are real.
Oh no, okay, yeah. I didn't think we were, but that's fine. Yeah.
Well, only cuz we're talking about kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say we don't need to talk about who this person is, but it's mm-hmm. a person that you're close to and a person I've met over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his grown child pass away,
mm-hmm.
20, which is
27 years old.
Just so horrific. And I saw that posting just before we started the show, and it was words to the effect of nothing prepares you for nothing could prepare you for the death of a child before or after it happens. Words to those effect, that effect.
Now, yeah,
it's just so sad because, you know, he's a guy our age and, you know, the child was, you know, in our kids' ages.
No, exactly. You know, and life's just clipping along and then all of a sudden, bang, you get that phone call. And you know that term, I can't imagine?
Yeah.
That's what I was saying to him yesterday. It's like, I can't imagine. Like, he will describe... Because I'm going to see him today and then on the weekend. He'll describe it, but you have to live that. That's what he said. It's like what's going through him now, you just can't imagine.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse. Is there anything worse? Nothing. Than losing a child. Like that whole idea of going on, like every day and this is me speaking, not him. Can you imagine that every day getting up with that for the rest of your life, like that on your mind or that thought, or how would they have developed and what kids they would have had? No, my goodness.
Were you and I talking about this on the phone and I said to you that that's the thing you just never get over?
Oh, yeah. You know.
I know who I was talking. I was actually interesting. I was having this conversation with my older brother
mm-hmm.
about the families in Humboldt.
Yes.
And that's what I said to him, you know, because he's a smart guy, and I said, in your estimation, how does somebody get over that? And he said, they don't. They will have distance from it. You know, one day they'll be like, okay, that happened a long time ago. But he said they will just, it'll just always be with them. Now, they can choose at some point in their lives to concentrate on something else, but that will be, as you say, some part of every day of the rest of your life, that will there'll be a thought or two of this lost child.
You know, time heals. To a certain extent with that, you learn somehow to adjust to go on. But I was talking to Dan Duran the other day, too, and he tragically lost his sister in a car accident years ago. But he was saying to me, his mom never got over that. His dad didn't either, but he said there was always something about his mom. He knew she never got over that,
mm-hmm.
and which you could totally understand. And the thing is with me, if that ever happened to me, forget me. What goes through my mind immediately is Delise.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you have to live with a person who's feeling the same level of grief. So you're in grief, and you have to worry about how that person is handling it.
Humble and Fred won't disappear this morning. Not till the show is over.
We've got a legendary interview on the way. You're listening to The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. Please keep listening. This is The Best of Humble and Fred on air and online.
People say she's crazy. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Well, that's one way to lose these walking blues. Diamonds on the
soles. You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong, and we are on to our interview segment featuring some fun guests in our past 7 years of the Humble and Fred archive. I'm Philip Pong, by the way. Thank you very much for listening, and we have some wonderful, wonderful footage from a very funny guy who's also a singer, and he's talented. He's on TV. He's on everywhere. How about that? We've got the great Hugh Dillon now on The Best of Humble and Fred.
Hugh Dillon. What the hell, man?
Welcome to the Humble and Fred Studios.
I love it.
Yeah, it's something else.
Let's get Hugh settled.
For you U.S. kids that aren't familiar, one of Canada's hardest rocking and most enduring bands was led by this gentleman for many, many years. Now some of you see him on, I think it runs on the CBS Flashpoint, I believe, is a CBS property.
Yeah.
So you might know him from that, but let's say hello to an old friend of the show. Hugh Dillon's here.
Woo! You.
Look how good you look. I think the last time I saw you, I said that to him. I was, look at you. You look amazing. Huh. And you kind of looked at me puzzled. I can't remember where we ran into each other. You kind of looked at me puzzled because there were times you used to come on the show that you didn't look as bright-eyed and bushy-tailed as you do these last decade or so.
Yeah.
So, just get a little closer to them, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, well, I've noticed that, too, when watching Flashpoint. I mean,
should I wear these headphones?
You can. Yeah, you don't have anymore. To, you know. You know,
I noticed that.
Like.
You know, when you're on Flashpoint, you have a good TV head.
Yeah.
Like, you look good on television. You really do, and the show is fantastic as well. Mm-hmm. You got to be proud of that.
I love that I just put these headphones on. I was trying to relate to you, Yahoos, and like, I don't quite hear. And then the headphones on, I hear my own voice.
Right,
yes,
there you go.
Yeah, it's something else.
Yeah, no, Flashpoint. It was just, it's like winning the Stanley Cup if you're an actor, and it was just a great. You join this team. It's like. My favorite hockey team were the Flyers. So Bobby Clark in the 70s.
Fred Shiro.
But yeah, that was the team. And when you join any kind of team, and the Headstones are like that. I love being part of that band. It's chemistry. And with Flashpoint, when I joined those folks, and they were just so smart, the writers, Mark Ellis and Stephanie Morgenstern, and the producers, and that cast, and that crew, it was, this is a team that's going to go the distance.
Well, how does that come about?
Like,
how
it's chemistry and it's people at the top. I can explain it. It's the people who they know what they're doing and they've been around the block. It's like the Headstones with making albums now. We've done it, and if we get one more shot at it, we're going to do it right.
But I think what Fred's getting at, and we want to, because we've got time. I'm not sure what kind of time you have.
I got lots
of time. In our new incarnation.
I listened to you guys before I was on the show, just so you know.
Did you really?
Yeah.
On your way in?
Did a little research?
No, not just today.
Oh, good.
When I was back in Toronto before, I was like, there they are. And I stay here because you guys are funny and very clever.
Did you hear that? Mm-hmm. Hugh Dillon endorsed.
And you were talking about some nonsense that was fascinating.
That's all we did.
Like I was going, when I got home, I went, that was nonsense. But it's in the car, nonsense. I was going, that was fascinating.
So, well, that's all we do. So you know we have time. And what we're trying to get to is there was a period of time you made music, you were a musician, you lived pretty hard. And we'll tell a few stories of you being on our show and us having to find you things.
Yeah.
But. So talk a little bit about, put some perspective on your career, because you went from that, and before you got to Flashpoint,
yes,
you don't just walk off the stage with the Headstones at the Horseshoe one night and walk into a huge series. What was the intervening years, and let's talk a little bit about you sort of getting your act together. And we have time for nonsense, too.
Yeah, good. No, I just, so much of it was, really so much of it is getting
clean and sober and having, you know, my sisters and my folks and my wife and people like that really get past the show business and the BS. And once you kind of have to really get serious and try to save your own life. I mean, you're asking me, so that's just the truth. That's where it took me. It was like you've got to be able to walk away from everything, and that included the band that I was in forever and the thing that I wanted to do from the time I was 16 and 17 and grew up in Kingston with Gord Downie, who plays this, you know, in the Hip, and that's all I wanted to do. And they didn't have that. And, you know, and the guidance counselors didn't say, you know what, you could probably be a singer in a rock band and drink beer all the time and smoke dope and, you know, have a tour the country. It'd be great. There was not an option. So you had to fight for that. And you have to write your own ticket for that. And you've got to, you know, so I guess what I'm trying to say is you fight so hard to get where you want to be. And then you realize where I am is dangerous and compromising. And so it knocks you on your ass. And then I had to kind of pull myself out with a lot of help from other people. And then it really comes down to near-death experiences and what do you want to do with your life? And other than, you know, my time with my family and my wife and my sister, and I loved acting and I liked, and it was something I could do. I moved to California and I was in my 40s. The Headstones, you know, look, you guys know what it was like. It was the end of the 90s. Nirvana was dead. Kurt Cobain killed himself. It was all over. The Spice Girls were the new thing. There was no way anybody's going to play our videos, play our songs. We're in Kappa's casing, opening a door that has a brick wall with a little graffiti that says, "How's your career going?" You know what I mean?
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more from our old friend, rock star, TV star, talented man of worldly renown, Hugh Dillon. We've got more of him coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. We're also going to hear him sing in a while. You're listening to The Best of Humble and Fred on air, online. I'm Philip Hong. Thank you very much for listening to this edition. First, we have a couple of very important messages.
Sherpa.
Okay, I want the Sherpa. Sherpa.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't really need it. The Sherp will be in Sherpa again this week. I feel bad for my Sherp. You know, he's ailing with a bad back.
Yeah.
To pass the time and forget about the pain, maybe he should interact with Johnny Soprano. It's a good way to make the time go by.
No, I bet.
Anyway, last week the Sherp was talking about that 1%. You know, over a 30-year plan, if you just get one more percent average over the life of that plan, it could turn into like $1 million. So the point being, you know, you need the right advice, you need the right guy, and you need the right guy to handle your money. And that's the Retirement Sherpa.
Yeah, it is.
Tim is a portfolio manager, and Raymond James is a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. Tim, you can get a hold of him at retirementsherpa.ca. And I'll tell you, he's there for you. You know, you talk to him one day, and he says, "Today I'm in Oshawa, tomorrow I'm in Burlington, I'm up here, I'm up there." He seems to go to his clients, which is a great service, and he's a great guy. He's the Retirement Sherpa, retirementsherpa.ca, Tim Nibbala.
Nibble.
Here's a note from an actual GigSky user. It says, "My wife and I eloped to Ireland in June, and having the GigSky hotspot was invaluable. After our wedding, we flew to Amsterdam and then London. It fired up easily as soon as we landed in each country and was much needed as we had rented a car for our stay and needed directions from the airport to our hotel." And Jesse goes on to say basically just how incredibly convenient, how the data was used and able to check flights, hotels, listen to the radio, even watch some English Netflix while we were there. Not to mention, Rudra Rishi Maharaj from GigSky was always available with any questions, and had the customer service was excellent. An actual GigSky user, it ends simply, "Thanks, GigSky." If you haven't figured out by now that that's the way to go,
I don't know what you're thinking about. Okay, stop thinking about what you're thinking about and get a Gig Sky hotspot. You can get, of course, what
Gig Sky Sim. Check out our website, humbleandfredradio.com. Click on Gig Sky. Get it for free.
What he said.
Yeah.
You're listening to Humble and Fred Radio.
Hugh Dillon. So let's talk a little bit about that near-death experience, that life-changing moment. Was it something that was self-realization, meaning one day you were just so high and drunk and thought, I got to stop doing this, or...
I didn't know you could swear on this show.
Yeah, bitches. Okay.
He does, I don't.
No, that's right. You, Fred, I was too classy. was it that, or was it somebody in the family, was it a group of people
it's
that came to you and
this.
Said, Hugh...
No, dude, I can tell...
What's going on?
I can tell you what it is. It's like, you know, there's that example of... You know, if you put a frog in boiling water, it can survive, and you slowly turn up the heat until it dies. It's like it's so slow that it catches,
it's insidious.
And it just catches you because you start. I mean, I was a you know, the other to name drop the other kid I grew up in Kingston was Doug Gilmore. So we lived on the same street. Hockey players. I was a hockey playing, beer loving, weed smoking, crank up the tunes. Drive fast kid from Kingston who had big dreams. So it was like I wasn't, you know, the thing is, and I remember, and when I moved to try, and I'd moved to England because I'd gotten in trouble with the same kind of BS when I was younger too. So my parents said, well, you know, you've got to, well, they didn't really say, they you know, I don't want to get into that part of the story, but it was in serious trouble and with, you know, illegal activity, and I had to leave the country. My parents said,
That's fine.
You got to sign this thing. We're going to get you a plane ticket. You can go anywhere in the world. I'd never been on a subway, never been on an airplane. I was 19, and I had just gotten the kicked out of me, got out of the hospital. I was going to either take revenge on the people I was having problems with or... off. And so my parents said, you know, you should probably take this opportunity.
That's a great.
So I got on a plane, and it was so long ago, I had a Fostex tape recorder, and I thought, and then I'm going to rebuild my life, learn how to write songs, and do the things I want to do. And where do you want to go, Hugh? London, England. Because that's where the Stones, the Pistols, the Beatles, that's where music comes from, so that's where I'm going. Mm-hmm. And I had culture shock. I was 19. I knew no one. I'd never really been out of Kingston. And so, you know, you just got to do what you got to do and you go where life takes you. But in my case, I always was directed towards, you know, rock and roll, or I just always liked TV, music, and films.
How desperate did you become, or were you? You keep referring to near death experiences. Like, how near death?
Well, So my point with all that stuff, with being a kid from Kingston, you think that you will never, with the beer drinking and the weed and the rock and roll, that you will never really get into hard narcotics because you see other people and you look down on them. and because you feel that you are better than them because it'll never get that bad.
Yeah.
Right.
And it does get that bad. You know, and we've all heard it. I mean, I've read a million books now. When you see it, when you reread them, you go, oh, Johnny Cash. And anybody, because you're on the road forever. I remember the time. It was one day. It's like we were on the, I think it was the second album, and I was so good. The first two records with the headstones, so good. But you don't realize you're in a machine, and like Trent looked it up and said, you know, do you realize we played a gig once every 3 days for the first 2 years? We were playing everywhere, back-to-back Canada, everywhere. And that's why we survive now, because we've got this great following.
But there's a cost. There's a cost to
that. I remember where it was. I woke up in Edmonton, and I was exhausted, and we're playing every night. And we give her, for lack of a better expression.
Now, you're not doing an acoustic set at a coffee shop. Oh, everyone, let's just be quiet while the barista makes our latest latte.
Yeah, and I remember where it was. It was like... I can't get into, because in my youth I had problems with cocaine and stuff, and that's when I went to England. So I had quit. And so in my late 20s, when we got the record deal, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm good, because I just drink a lot and smoke weed, so I'm good.
Yeah.
And that thing clicked over again.
You're like a rock star health nut at that point.
Yeah, I was.
That's what
I thought. I've got this covered. And then I slipped back into it, and then the descent comes. It was the 90s, and the descent comes where I slipped back into blow. And because I remember it was Edmonton. I do not want to play tonight. And I do not have a personality. And the coffee's not cutting it. And I've been up 3 days straight. And somebody had something. And like, well, and then after the gig is, you were really good. And I went, yes, I was. Do you have any more of that really good gig powder?
Yeah. And, gig enhancement material?
The gig enhancement.
It's like hamburger helper for rock stars.
And it worked. And I went, oh, I'm just doing the right amount. And then you juggle it. I'm like, I'm doing the right amount. And then I got back to Toronto and I thought, I got to come down. I'm wired. And, I'll get a little volume. And that worked for a little while. And then it was just the cocaine, it was the 90s, and heroin made a big comeback. And in England, when I was a young man, that's why this story is so rambling, that's where I was introduced to that. Because I thought, I'll never get into heroin. Mm. But the introduction was so, you don't have to get into it because you're not using needles. Here, just smoke it like you'd smoke. We're going to put it in this foil. We're going to light a little match under it and just hold this. It's a pen. Just take the cartridge out of it and just inhale. And I thought, all these innocuous or these items, there's foil, there's a pen. Why wouldn't I?
Those are the kind of things you find in a preschool. Yeah, for God's
sake. I'm like MacGyver. I'm like the heroin MacGyver.
How many people are in the band at the time? At that time?
Well, when we started. It's always been the same crew. Me, Trent, Tim, and then we had Mark Gibson. That was the first album. And then Trent's brother, who is now in the picture. If you've got a picture of this new album,
right,
Aaron, if we have it, this is the funny part. Because it's a family operation. And Trent and so Steve, who's the keyboard player, you would never see, never appeared in any of the pictures, and became a road runner. Because when the band first started, I go, Steve, just before it was down on Queen Street, I needed money. And Steve, I need $500. Nobody's going to lend it to me. I need $500. If you have it, you can be a road manager.
Well, why did you ask how many people?
The reason I'm getting because did they all do it?
Like, no, that's the thing.
That's the pressure, too. No, one guy does it and screws everything up, right?
No, because they're all such, they're such different individuals, and that's why the band exists, and that's why we exist for this long and we're this close. Tim and Trent, for example. Trent's always been a really quiet guy. He went to OCA. He drew. You know, the only time he became weaponized is when he picked up the guitar because it will stop everyone from talking. It'll stop everything. And he's a really creative force. It was, for me, I always thought, who's this weird quiet dude? And then he played these great songs. And then our relationship developed because we were outsiders. We didn't fit in Toronto. We didn't fit with the other people in Toronto.
Yeah, you were tougher to categorize. But I was going to stunt and sidetrack you, but I think what Fred is kind of getting at is in a situation like that, you're on the road, you're a family, and you were the guy. You were the one that was functionally dysfunctional. And did it affect the other guys?
No.
Is that kind of what you're going on?
Yeah, no. They say to you, like, Hugh, come on. This is our living.
No, because what's funny is they... What happened to us is years later when we saw Jackass, we thought, that's us. Because what we did was we had no respect for the other bands in Toronto or the bull... So we can entertain ourselves. And we entertain ourselves with music, with our stories, like what you guys do every day. We'll talk about until the cows come home, and we find it endlessly fascinating. And then we add a couple beers, and then it becomes, well, let's see what Hugh can do. and then I'll do it for a while. And then it's like, well, let's see what you can do. And then we saw, it's like, and then we're in a Japanese restaurant snorting the hot sauce.
Yeah, let's Hugh will do anything.
You know, and then Tim, and the thing is, those guys had gone back. They were friends since 1972. So the bond, Tim White and Trent and Trent's brother, Steve, I fell into it. So we just had this natural chemistry and then the camaraderie from having to play together.
So for a lot of, for a bunch of years, Hugh and the guys or Hugh on his own would show up at different points when we were at the edge. And then one year, the famous Headstone stories. You know this. I don't even know if you've been on the show and have we ever told you this story, but you may not remember it. We were doing our show at the Horseshoe. We'd done it 4 or 5 years in a row, our Christmas show, and it was big. It was the Bare Naked Ladies, the Headstones, the doo-wops.
It's like 8 o'clock in the morning at the Horseshoe. I've been up all night.
Yeah, there's 300 people.
Yeah,
and we packed the place out. It was a real event. And then what? And then we were excited that you were on the show. And around 7:20. we're on stage and we take a break and somebody comes up to Fred and I and says, Hugh and the guys are here. And we go, great. And they said, well, Hugh won't go on unless they open the bar. And we're like, oh, yeah. And open the bar. It's 7:20 in the morning in Toronto.
We don't have that power.
We don't have that kind of power.
Yeah.
And then we send that message to your manager or whoever. And then the message comes back. Anyone got any weed? And we just... It just so happened that one of our friends, one of our big fans, is a guy, a character known as Dave the Gay Guy, but he was also a drug dealer.
Right.
Who's now been clean and sober for a long time.
Right,
as well.
Right.
But we're like, Dave, can you...
You got a joint?
But what's funny is... To now, that seems outrageous. But then, that was par for the fucking course. I remember my first acting gig with Bruce McDonald. I had gotten off the road with the Headstones, shown up in North Ontario somewhere.
Was it Highway 61 that you were
in? No, it was Dance Me Outside.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it's like, I don't know how to make movies, and I stay up all night. I mean, our gigs finish at 3 in the morning, and then we stay up and drink and laugh and talk about the gig till 7 and go to bed and get up and go to the next place or whatever. Or sometimes we stay up. And in the early days, we would see if we could stay up. One time we had to drive from Toronto to Vancouver in a van, all of us, to make the gig in Vancouver, and we still had no money then. And let's see if we can drink the whole way there. Just like that seems like a great idea.
Let's drink across the schedule, yeah, yeah. Including the driver.
Yeah, and it was the same story. It's like, you know, the scene starts, and I had the shakes, and luckily the producer, you want a beer? You know, and that would never happen on a set now with acting, you know.
Well, let's talk about it. So getting back to the, I guess, the question I asked some minutes ago about...
And I remember those horseshoe things. I remember, you know, because I always appreciated you guys. And I didn't always appreciate people I dealt with. Because, you know, you can tell some people are on and some people are kind of full of it. And as soon as the... For whatever reason. But those horseshoe... Morning ones, I loved and hated. I loved them because it seemed great as it was coming. It's great. We're invited and we loved playing and we liked you guys. But then the day of, I'm watching the clock and most people go, oh, I got to get up in a few minutes. I would be going, oh, I got to sober up in a few minutes. And it would be brutal. But I got to tell you one thing that happened out of that that was always, it reminds you to try to be down to earth even then, is I remember walking in that morning and I'm like going, I could probably do it. What's the one? Yeah, I think I can do this. And I'm like, who's this guy staring at me? Hey, man, how are you? And it was George Strombolopoulos before he was famous.
Yeah.
Because he would wait down there and he'd hang
with us because he was our buddy.
Yeah, and he would just watch everything. George was a real watcher. That's why he knows so much. And I felt, and then later in life, I was always on his shows and stuff. But I thought, that's so funny because I could have come in and been a real dick. I'm burnout. What are you looking at? But instead, it was, hey, man. And I always thought, for whatever grace of God you have sometimes, like you just happen to be, have your together at the right time.
At that right moment.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, as I said, a few minutes ago I asked, was it a self-actualized moment with a lot of people who decide to get clean and sober where they kind of go, okay, I've had enough. Like in my case, I just went, okay, I've now drank enough and I don't think I'll be drinking anymore at this point.
Yeah.
With you, was it forced upon you or did you say to your family and friends?
I couldn't stop.
That's interesting the way you put that, because for a lot of people, they say,
I wanted to stop.
I got to the point where I knew I needed to stop, but I couldn't. And did you reach out or did someone reach out to you?
It's so funny. It's so brutally difficult. I wanted to stop. I reached out to people. I tried to get help, and then I had to get help.
By the way, if I may stop, was it drinking and heroin at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
And along the way, was there like intervention? People coming to you and going, Hugh,
no,
come on.
Sometimes, but it was just before interventions were popular.
Right.
So people didn't really know, but I knew, and my family knew, and the band, you know, when it really... There's such a thing as you got to hit bottom. You got to really want it, and it comes to the point of you got to be able to walk away from your job. You got to save your life. And when and the other problem with the entertainment or you're in a bubble kind of, and you don't want to walk away from the things, so you can kind of, you're protected. Yeah, I can kind of do this for a while, and if this was just a regular job, like I used to work at Canpar loading boxes, if I was that wasted and came in, you're fired.
Mm-hmm.
And then that makes you, that hits your bottom. So I think that's answering your question. It's like, with rock and roll and some of this, in the 90s too, you could hang yourself because you could go longer, you know, and there was, you know, we see examples of it all the time. I was just so lucky.
So when was it? What was the, what is your date of sobriety of
it's
whatever?
Like July 13 years ago, you do the math.
When it comes to spiritual enlightenment, Humble and Fred are the real deal. Deepak Chopra can kiss my ass.
We've got more where that came from. More of Hugh Dillon coming up on The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. Thank you very much for listening. The second hour coming up.
Waiting, watching the clock. It's 4 o'clock. It's got to stop.
Welcome back. The Best of Humble and Fred continues on air and online. I'm Philip Pong. Thanks so much for listening. We're brought to you by Strainprint, homegrownkits.ca, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, Gig Sky, FYI, Music News, and The Retirement Sherpa. And we're going to continue with part two of Hugh Dillon, the legendary, talented artist extraordinaire.
We're going to talk about the new record. We've been talking about this sort of time in Hugh's life. Probably the last time we had Hugh on at the Edge would have been the late 90s. In the early 2000s, Hugh said one day, hey, I should probably be stop being stoned all the time and hammered. And July of 20, whatever it was, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, you had done a little acting.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about how you life showed up for you after your new sobriety, and then when did it really sort of take off in terms of your on camera presence?
I was really lucky that I had this. I had gotten to do Hardcore Logo with Bruce McDonald and Callum Rennie, because I had learned in the 90s in making the record, that was the first thing, I'd signed a contract saying I will be clean and sober for this movie. And Callum was a really great acting coach. It's like learning on the job. And I had a lot of power that I didn't know I had then, because I was the lead on that movie. And they liked my ideas, and it was about rock and roll. So it was a really, it was a perfect fit. And I was allowed to push it. And I wrote that ending. And Callum was just a really, it all comes down to chemistry. It's like later in Flashpoint, me and Enrico Colantoni. It's the same thing. It's like, Callum was awesome. So I learned this skill. And Bruce had gotten me to do a few other things. So I kind of had the basics. And a lot of it's instinct. And also, you know, I remember doing a play in high school at KCVI in Kingston with Gord Downie. So it's like, you know, I kind of knew it. But the thing is I loved rock and roll because it's your own thing. And you don't have to deal with everyone else. And it's your vision. And so So when I kind of got clean and sober, I was focused on this thing. I had gotten a few breaks here and there, and then I'd gotten to do a movie with Vera Farmiga called Down to the Bone that went to Sundance. So all of a sudden, I'm at Sundance, and she's saying, you know, you really have to, you know, you could really be a great actor. You need to get your together, and here's my agent, and you should probably move to LA. And so it just, instead of,
were you sober when you moved to LA?
Yes.
Yeah,
that was my first 6 months of sobriety.
Really?
And
that's a tough place for a guy with appetites.
Well, it would have been, and it would have killed me. And but the other thing is, the thing that I'm really always grateful for is I've always been a songwriter and a musician. So when I went to LA, I went, oh, this is where Jim Morrison met Ray Manzarek. And so most actors, when they go there, oh, this is where James Dean, and this is where the studios are. So I had this really great time in my life. I'd had all that experience with the Headstones, all my experiences with life, and then I'm there, and I was busy enough because you've got to go meet people and audition and blah blah blah. And I met my friend Taylor Sheridan, who was just now up for an Oscar. I've got a show in development with in the States, and he Wendy O'Brien, who's a casting director, who cast Hardcore Logo, she lived in this, she had moved to LA. So I knew a few people, and she, you know, she's a casting director for Sons of Anarchy, a bunch of big shows, and she's Canadian, and Durham County eventually came up, and I met the women who made that show, and they were just really real go-getters, and they changed the face of Canadian television. And I heard you guys talking about Canadian TV before.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this show, and for whatever reason, I'm in LA, I'm doing my thing, And my chops just got better because I didn't have to worry about things. And I was super focused. And, you know, what do I got to do? What do I got to do? And I had a lot of these chops from acting and from playing in the band that I didn't realize I had. And once you take the drugs and the alcohol out of the way, all of a sudden I'm kind of in better shape. I'm up early. I didn't start drinking coffee till I was 40. Now I drink it like a freak.
I know.
But and then one thing led to another, and then I had, you know, and then I got Flashpoint. I remember driving into CBS studio to see Nina Tassler, the head of CBS, and she had two shows. She had the pilot for Flashpoint, and she had the pilot for Durham County. And she said, "I think we're going to go with Flashpoint." And the rest is history, and then I've always loved L.A.
So how many years has that been,
Well, it's in my entire sobriety.
15 no, years. You've been on Flashpoint for...
I did that for 5 years, and it was a great ride. And then I'd go back and forth to L.A., and it ended 5 years ago, and then I did The Killing, went back to L.A. and got on The Killing, and just worked and just finished a movie with Nick Cage. And what I love is a lot of these shows use my music. And so the reason I've always loved doing both is... the music saved me and still does, because I go back to writing and playing in the band, and it's and that and this record, it's like you talking about you guys doing it yourself. It's like we rebuilt the band.
Well, but go ahead.
No, I was going to say you were talking about being desperate, and then even off air, I think you said you had no money. You know,
yeah.
What's that like? When something like Flashpoint comes up and they call you in and say, you have it, and, you know, it's affiliated with United States distribution and everything. It's
worldwide.
Like,
worldwide.
And it's all of a sudden I've got money.
Well, if the first thing is, you know, I remember my niece got married, so I had money to help her with her wedding. I could buy my folks a car. We were talking about, you know, my wife who had basically saved my life. I could finally, you know, get a down payment for a home for us. Just the things that you always hope for, and then you can give back to the people. And I was in a position to do it because I'd been clean and sober long enough. I'll tell you, if I had fallen into that when I was using and drinking, it would have all gone.
Yeah. This is Humble and Fred.
The moment you're waiting for is coming up. I'm Philip Pong on The Best of Humble and Fred. Hugh Dillon sings, but first on air and online, The Best of Humble and Fred with incoming messages. Bling!
Go to fymusicnews.ca, subscribe to the newsletter. It offers a tightly written digest of key events and news of the day in Canada and beyond at the start of each workday. The FYI website provides expanded features, including a weekly careers section, and columns of interest by musicians and journalists such as Bill King. And it also offers you access to all the music charts. For more information, up-to-date music news, go to fyimusicnews.ca.
This is Humble and Fred.
Hugh Dillon.
How long ago did the notion of producing new Headstones music come to you? You mentioned you've been writing all along.
Mm-hmm.
What were the other guys doing while you went to Los Angeles to seek your fame and fortune?
Here's the great news. I remember the day that I had to pack it in, and this is what we've got a great manager, Bernie Breen, and most managers will want to keep you on the road and figure a way just to get you back on the road to make money, and he knew that I was going to buy it. And Tim White, our bass player in the Headstones, it was like, you know, because we'd seen it. You see it all the time. Musicians die in hotel rooms. That's the way it is. And sometimes you get that moment of clarity, and those guys were so gracious. They knew that I had to walk, and it was okay. And those guys went on, and Tim and Trent are the most creative people that I know, and that's why it's such a pleasure to play with them. Tim, people don't know this, Tim got got to go to Berkeley to study on a scholarship. You know, he's a bass player. He's a musician, and he still works. And Trent's an artist. He does whatever he wants to do, and he's just an authentic individual. And his brother Steve does whatever he wants to do too. So anyway, the long and short of it is, we weren't getting back for any reason. It was done, and you know, we walked away and we did our thing. And the music had changed so much, and that's where social media kind of jumped back in our faces. So what it was this friend of ours, Randy Kwan, who was in my typing class in grade 9 in Kingston, went to KC, knew the hip, everybody else.
By the way, I love that class in grade 9.
Yes.
You know why? Because it was only me and another guy. Everyone else was a mm-hmm. girl.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is what a great elective this was.
Well, I thought it was genius. Great. I thought it was great until I failed typing and had to go to typing summer school.
Oh,
and then I was, I'm not kidding you. And then the future, who knew that all of a sudden people see me typing now on computers and they go, wow, you can do that.
Same thing happened to me. I failed.
Yeah.
But I learned the keyboard well enough.
Yes.
That is something I've used my whole life.
Well, and that's funny because I remember talking to my daughters and I was saying that, you know, because I didn't finish all of high school, most of it. And I said, the thing that I've used every day of my life is the ability to sort of type.
Well, it is.
Not math equations.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
I can't add fractions, but I know the QWERTY UI up.
I had a woman called Miss Dunn. And then I once it went to electric typewriters, I was like, I'm not learning anything. But I could do the basics.
So guy in grade 9
so
typing.
So Randy called up. Randy wrote Cemetery with us. Randy and another guy from Kingston, Grand Etche, and he wrote this song, Losing Control. A lot of stuff on the first record. And then he got in a fight with Trent, threw his bass at him. And he's like, I'm out of here. He was really smart, really cool. He was like a Malcolm McLaren, really, really cool. And smart enough to go, yeah, we're already going to tour the country, and blah, 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 I'm out. Like, he was also kind of an elitist, just a really bright guy. And so I hadn't seen him in years, and I cleaned up, and we would party at his house all the time. And but we're loyal. And he called up and said, hey, man, what's up? And I hadn't, I'm in my trailer in Flashpoint. I hadn't seen him in 5 years. He goes, well, two things. I've got a two-year-old kid. Oh, good for you, man. Good for you. And I've got cancer. I've probably got 7 or 8 months on it. So I flew to Vancouver to see him, and he had all these pictures of us playing at Lee's Palace and saying, you know, those times were great times playing the band. I'm proud of everything. And the long and short of it is he had no insurance. He was a musician. He's an artist. And we could help him out because he passed away. And his kid's great. His kid's name's Hunter. And he was looking out for them. And so he knew that. What's funny is we don't seem like the most rational people, but we are there for each other. And so I called those guys and said, you know, we should do something. And and so we got together for the right reason, and because of social media, we're playing down at the docks, and 3,000 people showed up, and we're like, we didn't think it mattered, and they flew in from everywhere, and we rehearsed and were really great, and then it was like, then we're getting together and we're talking and laughing, and out of that comes the creative. And I go, I think I got the song. Been This Way for Years, which became the first track, and we released that for free and did it ourselves. And then we realized, oh, we're writing. And I worked with this great producer who worked on my solo stuff and did Flashpoint songs. His name's Chris Ostie. So I had this great group of people, and we were kind of back, and then we said, well, we could play another gig, and, you know, and then we wrote, and then these are great songs. We like them. And then we crowdfunded it, and, you know, because my thinking was, I don't want to just release some stupid record and have them sit in my basement. You know, if people really want them, they can buy them. Mm-hmm. And in one day, we reached our goal, went past our goal. People are out there, and it just built momentum into this album, Little Army.
And here's something from it called Devil's on Fire.
Yeah.
All right.
Listen to this riff. This is Trent.
I'm going to listen to it. It's coming up right now. Yeah, bitches.
Out here on the ocean, adrift upon the sea. I'm staring at the stars now. But what's become of me? Can't even move a muscle. I can't even think.
God, I love that.
The water's all around me.
It's coming. It's
Here we go.
I just want to drink. The storm has never ceased here. And all the mothers cry. When the darkness is a fire, just don't look it in the eye. I'm a red meat eater, liar, and a cheater. And I hit the ground running, take everything I need. I'm a red meat eater, liar.
Not bad for a bunch of old guys.
Yeah.
Here on the ocean, I've been set adrift. The water doesn't scare me.
It's like Hugh Dylan's karaoke.
It's just the people that I'll miss. And the
Yeah, you can carry
has
it.
Has forgotten what's on top.
Jesus.
The storm has never ceased here. And it'll never stop.
Wow.
You're doing everybody. I like that.
It's like the old days at the horseshoe.
It's like Headstones karaoke.
Yeah.
That's an awesome dude. You know, it's still hard to categorize that music. It's not like a lot of, you know, it's not a lot of stuff being made like that.
Yeah.
Attacking and production and that kind of guitar sound.
That's the Headstones.
Well, and even what's funny is talking about the difference, you know, American critics too. There's an American critic because what's funny is I've got friends in Canada who go, well, explain this band, Headstones. And what's the American equivalent? There isn't one.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting for us. It's got a little social distortion. And when we play to American audience, which are really only American audiences that get Canadian radio. So we play in Washington. We'll play in Buffalo. We used to play CBGBs occasionally. It's such a unique thing because we didn't explore the States because...
Right.
We couldn't. We stayed home, you know?
Have you ever talked to Gord Downie about that? Because that's sort of like the hip, too. A mass appeal in Canada. They really didn't crack the States.
No, but they did in a really subversive way. I've gotten to see them everywhere, from in England, everywhere else. We are looking at the way things are cracked in terms of, you know, Miley Cyrus cracked. We're so outrageous.
Yeah, right.
But those guys always toured in the States, always played. It's still, you know, you're just under the radar of... giant, huge stardom, which is similar
to the ladies as well. I mean, they probably peaked their head a little bit above that with a 1 week, which was a huge hit down there. But they're bubbly under fame.
Yeah.
Do you talk to Gord at all?
There's a song that we a song on this album called Kingston, and I never. I mean, you know, we wouldn't be here without Gord when you guys were on the air, and we. We're looking for a record deal, and Cam Carpenter worked for MCA that long ago in the 90s. It was Gordon Paul who showed up at our showcase gigs when MCA was there and went, you know, we're the guys in the hip, and we know Huey from Kingston, and this is a great band. And they allowed us to play with them, and I could go on, you know. But the long and short of it is I came up with a song called Kingston. About us in high school and going to see Luther Guitar Johnson, Muddy Waters guitar player at this place called the Prince George, because this guy in Kingston in the 80s was booking like world-class blues bands, and we were like little stoner kids. What the is this?
Yeah.
And Gord's just been so good to me and all those guys my whole
life. How's Gordy doing?
Well, I think he'll live forever. So my long rambling point about that is, you know, it's a difficult situation, but I've never met a more decent person. And so with this song, I threw the lyrics past him, and I never go, hey, what do you think of these lyrics? And it was about Kingston growing up, and he was like, I love it. And he's just a, you know, here's what I know. And so that was a few months ago, and I love when I see him on TV and see him with Bobby Orr, and in my mind, and maybe I'm naive, he will live forever. And so,
hopefully, you're right.
Yeah, I've been right about a lot of things.
Yeah, man. the new record, "Devil's on Fire." Hughes, are you guys going to do some support of this? Is there going to be some shows?
We got a couple of gigs. At the Velvet Underground Toronto, then we're playing a bunch of festivals, Blues Fest in Ottawa, we're going out to Halifax, playing a festival in Moncton, we'll be playing Kitabala in Cottage Country, so I can go
right
around on jet ski.
Kitabala.
I got kicked out of there.
That's when a cool place, man.
When we first were playing in the 90s, we have a thing in the back. If you look on our record cover where it says, the Headstones will not be welcomed at the Key again. And so we posted all those things.
Right. Speaking of posted, details about the Headstones are at
headstonesband.com.
Headstonesband.com at Real Hugh Dillon on Twitter, at The Headstones as well.
Yeah, or Facebook.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Just one last little line of are there Hugh Dillon acting fans that discover that you're also this guy who is a unique voice, an artist, a songwriter, a bandmate?
Yeah, it's
that weird for people?
I think it is weird for some, but some of them see the intensity in the roles. And what was funny about Flashpoint, if they're super fans, they've heard me sing on Flashpoint, because the beautiful thing about that show is those producers were really good to me, and they used some of my songs. So they were kind of...
That helped pay the mortgage a little bit?
Yeah. They were kind of aware. And so it's funny, because some people, the nature of the band is not the nature of people who love Flashpoint, because that was just such a beautiful show for everyone. But there are people who are fans of art and individuals who will go, oh, it's a little aggressive and can be a little mean-spirited, but I like it. And they will get into it because they like the art, or they really listen to the words. And it is those folks who stay. There are other people who I've seen them show up and go, well, Rico's not, the other guy in Flashpoint's not in this band, so...
This is not the Flashpoint tribute band.
Yes, yeah. And so, and well, that's not Amy Jo Johnson.
And so what will we, so besides doing some gigs in support of this, you said you just wrapped a movie. Is your schedule now back and forth between here and L.A.?
Well, the last 3 years, let me tell you this. This blew my mind. I my man, Bernie, just told me in the last 2 years, because I was shooting this show, who Doug would tell me about, because I'd be like, he goes, so how's that? So I was shooting this show called X Company in Budapest. So in the last 3 years, I'd live in Paris, fly to Budapest, shoot, go back to Paris, then come back to L.A., 66 flights in the last 2 years alone, 300 hours in the air, 200,000 clicks.
Wow.
And then that's why else being home in Toronto, being able to go to Muskoka and play Akita Ballas, seeing the band, not in my mind knowing I don't have to go to the airport, is awesome. Seeing you guys, you know, just this last week, and I'll let it go, but I did Breakfast Television with Steve Anthony. I love it. It's seeing all, you know, it's yesterday, Ed the Sox, Steve calls up, hey, will you do this thing? Yes. And so I see all these people that I've known. Time seems to have collapsed. Everybody's healthy, and we're moving on. We're
still doing it, yeah.
Yeah, because we love it on some level, or else we would do something else.
Well, that's what we all often say that about, you know, the arc of our career is that we're still doing it because we really love coming to do this every day.
When I tuned especially in you guys days, by fluke, go on.
No, I was going to say, especially on days when we get to see old friends like you.
Well, that's it. When we found out that it was a possibility you'd be on the show, we've been looking forward to this for weeks.
Yeah.
Almost like a countdown, Hugh.
Almost.
Yeah. How many more sleeps till Hugh's here?
You'll be here.
No, but it's a pleasure.
You stumbled. Please. Oh, no. We interrupted you in the middle of telling us how wonderful.
No, but it's true because, so again, and this isn't both. So again, when I got, so you bring him a coffee, you don't bring me one. Whatever.
Did you want a coffee?
No. Are you kidding? I won't leave. No, I won't leave.
This one?
I'm telling you.
You don't have to
leave. That one will, yeah, but that one will put me into trouble territory. That one, my phone will ring, my manager will go, maybe you should get off there. No, but it was like the other thing about being home. And like I said, okay, I'm back. Okay, radio, I'm home. Is my car? What's that's Humble and Fred. That's Humble. It's like hearing a hit song. That's what the f*** is this? Mm-hmm. You know, because I didn't know, and I'm like, they're funny. They're talking about whose turn it is to clean the bathroom.
Oh,
who's,
yeah.
Who's this Phil guy? You know? And I'm listening to that. And then it's like, hey, do you want to be on Humble and Fred? Yes.
Well, we appreciate it.
Well, listen, speaking of Phil, I don't like to brag, but one of the great, the true voices of his generation. Have a listen, Phil. Would you like Mr. Dylan to hear you?
I got a bucket full of shampoo. I got a bucket.
Oh, by the way, this is. I like that. I don't give a shit. That's our opening. Is that you, Phil?
Yeah, that's me.
Play this.
This is a song.
I am going to do this. I got a bucket full of stamp. What is it? Stampoo?
Stampoo. Yeah.
Holy.
It was about Howard's dog, Stan, pooing.
Yeah, I have to walk.
I got a bucket full of stampoo.
Who's the actual song originally?
It's Natasha Bedingfield.
So yes. I came home one day. I said, Phil, I'm walking around with a pocket full of stand poo. I feel weird because I can't find a garbage can. And this is the magic. Have a listen to this angel's voice.
I love it already.
I got a bucket full of stamp poo. I got a bucket full of dog poo. Oh, whoa.
Oh, yeah, it gets better.
Stan can't help it because he has to make a big poo. Doc's got a hand and it's all full of stamp poo. Oh,
here comes the chorus. Listen to this angel.
A bag of poo. Stand doggy doo.
Stand doggy doo.
How's that? The verse is better. If I was producing that, I'd go stay with the verses. The choruses are good, but as soon as I heard that verse, I was in. I got a bucket full of stamp poo. Jesus. I'm going right in the studio tonight.
That's really hilarious.
That's the kind of thing that's coming out of the Hummel and Fred studios nowadays.
Listen, man, great to see you looking so good.
You guys, too.
So
you guys look great. It's great.
What a pleasure to run into you again. And when you're back in town, you're always welcome.
I'll see you guys around Christmas. Well, we'll be back. We'll be back doing some, I think we're going to go tour in the fall.
We'd love to have you back for Christmas.
We always do a Christmas show.
Yeah.
We fill the room with people.
Do you really?
Yes.
Performance?
Yeah, maybe if you want to come by with your guitar, yes.
I'll get Trent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll do it up.
Okay, cool.
Hugh Dillon, good. Everybody.
Thanks, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed this interview, and we've got more of the Humble and Fred Fireside Chat. I'm Philip Pong on The Best of Humble and Fred. Thank you so much for listening to The Best of Humble and Fred on air and online. Welcome back. I'm Philip Pong, and good morning if you've just turned on your radio for free. You're listening to The Best of Humble and Fred, and we are continuing on with some of our fun fireside chats. These are segments from Humble and Fred in Conversation because everyone loves hearing from these two slightly not-so-young men. So we're going to start this chat edition, this chat segment of The Best of Humble and Fred, with old candy bars.
Did I tell you that yesterday? I put the hard candy in a bowl. Did I tell you that story? That was a thing I tweeted out on the weekend. I was cleaning up my place because my friend was coming over for a visit.
Ooh.
That's something that's changed. You know, when you have when you have somebody in your life, it's like all of a sudden I'm doing the laundry more often. I'm changing the sheets. I'm cleaning up my house, you know, as you do.
Oh, so now you're changing your underwear every day.
Yeah.
I know.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you live alone, you know, I don't, my house is never dirty. And it's not always tidy, but it's never dirty. I don't let stuff rot. But
right.
So I was cleaning up because she was coming over, and I had Sambuca flavored hard candies. I really like them. Licorice.
Mm.
So I had a huge handful of them. And anyway, I sort of was looking around what to do with them, to put them somewhere. So I went, I went and got a bowl, and I put them in a bowl.
Wait a minute. Why did you take a whole handful?
Well, I'd been... Here's the thing.
You're allowed one.
Hang on. I'd been there 3 times in 5 days, so right. I'd taken a few each time, so I ended up with a bunch of them. The point of the story is I got a bowl... And I put the hard candy in a bowl, and I sort of made myself laugh. I'm like, well, there's a sign of old age, you know. And that's where I tweeted, as I said, I think I'm turning into a grandma. I just put hard candy in a bowl, hashtag old people do. Yeah. Then the next one was, I just called somebody dearie.
Come on, sonny.
My grandmother always, remember what were humbugs?
Yes.
My grandmother always had humbugs.
And that's what somebody said.
Yeah. And humbugs. Then my... Freddie, would you pass me a humbug? That was my grandmother, because she used to like to suck hum.
Well, that's the thing. Old people like hard candy.
But my mom always used to have bridge mixture.
I love bridge mixture.
On her table.
Loved bridge mixture, yeah. Except there was always that one. There was always one in the bridge mixture that was disappointing.
The tiny minty one?
Yeah, maybe that minty one. It was like too much.
Or it really didn't call for mint.
No.
That mixture.
It's unnecessary.
Because there was like caramel and chocolate and stuff, and then all of a sudden this... Yeah, my mom always had the bridge mix. And it was funny, you'd go there and you'd have a couple and then just keep reaching and reaching and reaching, and by the end of the visit, it was gone.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of candy, so anyway, you can follow us on Twitter. On Instagram, we are...
Humble and Fred Radio.
Humble and Fred Radio, and on Instagram, I think I'm Humble Howard Comedy. Spencer set it up for me. I don't really do much with it. Are you on Instagram?
Oh, no.
And I know you're not, are you?
No, the odd time I look at it because of my kids, because that's where they all are now.
Oh, yeah. They put their stories up there. I can keep up with what Spencer's done every day. Well, I just have to follow her on Instagram.
Is there text? I thought it was just...
There's text around the pictures.
Right, it's sort of like Facebook photos. You click on the photos.
On Facebook, I saw this post from a friend in Winnipeg, and I sent you the screenshot, and it's all these candies that were around when you and I were kids. Now, Phil, can we put this up on ours as well?
Absolutely, yes.
So, because I think it would be good for people to have as a reference... And there's a couple of the candies on there that are still around.
Mm-hmm.
But the packaging is different. Is Eat More still around?
I don't know. You know, it could be, but I don't see it anywhere.
Yeah.
I used to like it, though.
Me too. Although it was a lot of work.
Well, it was almost like a molasses type thing, right? With nuts and... Mm. I think it was chocolate added to molasses with nuts. And it was...
What?
It was stiff gooey.
Oh.
Like, it wasn't gooey, like, melt in your hands, but you had to sort of tug on it.
So there's no way to, like, let it dissolve in your mouth, or you have to, like, somehow...
Well, so very, very slowly, Phil. It was more of a chewy thing.
Eat More, to me, wasn't like a choice one candy. It was just something, okay, there's no candy, well, we'll just have that.
It's probably not prominent nowadays because of the peanuts in it.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Phil, I just sent you. I'll send you this thing. You put it up on Facebook, and we'll see how many of our listeners recognize these.
The one at the top, Wigwag, I'm not familiar with that at all, ever.
Yeah, crunchy.
No, never
heard of it. Crunchy, amazing, used to love them, still do. Mm-hmm.
Are they around?
Yes.
Are they? Wow.
Kit Kat, still around.
Mm-hmm. Kit Kat, I love. Coffee Crisp, I love.
Nielsen Liquid 4 flavor, I don't recall that.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Sweet
Marie. They're not around anymore, but I remember them.
Love Sweet Marie's. Haven't had one in years. Don't remember the Cadbury Bar 6?
I do, but I haven't seen it in years. I remember Bar 6, they used to have quirky commercials for Bar 6. Sweet Marie was sort of like O. Henry, too, as well. Remember O. Henry?
Yeah.
It's not on here, but...
Hi, who's this?
Oh, it's Steve Martin calling from Belleville.
Steve from Belleville. Steve, what's going on?
Well, I was just listening to you, and... does anybody remember the Virginia chocolate bar?
Yeah.
I don't recall that.
No, it was almost like a Jersey milk, but it had peanuts in it. And all of a sudden, it just disappeared off the market probably about 25 years ago.
Yeah, in fact...
probably one of my favorite.
That's right. It was a Jersey milk with peanuts. That's what a Virginia was, right?
Hmm.
Yeah,
basically. Yeah. The same packaging, different word.
Do you guys remember the Wonder Bar? It's on this list.
Wonder Bar.
Yeah.
The Wonder Bar, though, in relation to all these, it came years after, like Coffee Crisp, Kit Kat.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Wonder Bar was actually... Remember those commercials?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I remember. The Wonder Bar!
Yeah. That was relatively not new, but... It came after.
For sure, but these aren't necessarily just from our childhood,
right,
but a lot of these are. What was your name again, sir?
It's Steve Martin, just like the comedian.
Right, Steve Martin. And you drive, where are you? Are you going to drive safely today if I don't tell you to drive safely?
Well, I'm trying to. I'm actually an insurance adjuster, so we're getting a lick of snow down here right now, so I'm just on my way into Prince Edward County.
Oh, do you do auto or home or both?
Mostly property, home, and... some liability claims.
Could I get you to call my adjuster and tell him to write my car off, please? Could you do that for me? Oh, yeah, no.
I'd like to, but I don't have a code of ethics.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah, I know.
Come on. Ethics are a...
Code of ethics. Oh, you're so Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You can't have that much of a code of ethics. You're listening to us.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, drive safely, even though I know you would anyway.
Okay, have a good day. Thank you.
By the way, did you resolve anything with the phone yesterday with Craig?
Not yet. Not yet.
Okay.
We're working on it.
The one that I remember most on this list that I had forgotten for a long time, when I saw the... It's not a list. It's a picture of all these, and Phil's putting it up on our Facebook right now. And it's not just necessarily from our childhood, because you're right. Wonder Bar came later, but I still haven't seen it much, but it was the Macintosh creamy coffee in that distinctive box, and I can tell you, Fred, I remember getting it and savoring it for as long as I could, because if I'm not mistaken, it came in, it had little pieces that you could click off
later.
You're right,
originally it was just flat,
one big flat slab of goo.
Yeah.
You're right. Later, that was a thing. It was a technological upgrade on the toffee. But the original was just that wax paper and a big tongue of goo.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it.
And the thing is about it, did you ever freeze it? and then smash it.
What do you say?
You would take your creamy Macintosh toffee and put it in the freezer, and then it would be very brittle. Then you could bang it, and then all these little pieces you could reach in for.
Wow.
Because Macintosh toffee on a warm day could get sort of messy.
Impossible.
Yeah. But, yeah, we used to freeze it and bang it. Well, same with malted milk. My mother loved malted milk, and she used to freeze those.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny, because I love, as you well know, most people have heard me say, I love chocolate when it's cold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, my new friend, after a sleepover, unbeknownst to me, had slipped a nice sea salt chocolate bar into my freezer.
Mm-hmm.
And she said later, did you look in your freezer? And I was like, I don't know, there was like a severed head in there or something. And she had left me a little gift of some chocolate.
Early relationships, eh? They're just magical.
It is. It's so good.
Holding hands.
It's crazy. Crazy the things that are going on. It's just beautiful. I love it. But it's things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Goji, I left you some chocolate in the freezer. I wish I'd have known that trick about the Macintosh toffee, though, because it was a struggle for me. I used to love it. It was my favorite candy, but it was a job.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real job, the toffee.
Yeah, malted milk. Are they still around? I don't even know. It's funny, because I never buy chocolate bars.
Aren't they like Maltesers?
Yeah,
like,
Maltesers are around.
Well, malted milk was more like a chocolate bar. It had a malty flavor.
Mm.
The only time I eat chocolate bars around Halloween now, those little ones, right? The leftovers. Like, I would never buy a chocolate. What's that one under the Wunderbar? Like, I think I remember that. I can't see what the name of it is.
Hang on a second.
But it was sort of like the...
It's called a Nielsen Treasures.
Okay, I'm not sure I remember that.
The one below it, though, the Nielsen Liquid 4 flavors, I do remember that as being this great candy innovation,
mm-hmm.
where they were having the stuff inside like it was, it was runny, sweet goo inside the chocolate.
Which one was that?
It's the
caramel.
Yeah, Liquid 4 flavors.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, caramel was like that,
right,
although it was all caramel.
This is Humble and Fred.
Coming up, we've got some real nostalgia on the Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong. I am your librarian for today, and I'm going to pull from our archive a lovely book, and it contains two very important messages.
You know, I mentioned that we have insurance with a chamber plan, and I also told that to my insurance agent, and I said, I already have insurance. She goes, yeah, but a lot of times benefits, you know, you only have a certain amount, and of course, the chamber plan has great benefits. Fred?
Hey, need coverage? Do you need coverage? Are you an employee or an employer? Hey, doesn't matter. Go to chamberplan.ca, get a free quote. Tell your boss, or maybe your boss will look into it and reward the employees with a great benefit package. Canada's number one plan for employee benefits. The Chamber's plan is Canada's leading group benefit plan for small firms, say 1 to 100. Again, you can get a free quote at chamberplan.ca. It's that easy, very simple, and this is stable because 30,000 Canadian businesses are now taking part, been around for over 40 years. Health and dental insurance, all there. Again, do yourself a favor, investigate. chamberplan.ca.
You know what else is good times, Frederick?
Huh.
You know what can be really good times?
Mm-hmm.
Is if you have a nice, on a beautiful summer's day, you have yourself a beautiful Spearhead beer.
Spearhead Brewing Company out of Kingston, Ontario makes its award-winning Hawaiian Pale Ale all year round. Yes, they do. It's 6%, so buckle up. West Coast... Well, no, I shouldn't say that. Should I buckle up? No. It's 6%. West Coast Pale Ale is brewed Hawaiian style with pineapple. It is naturally carbonated, unfiltered, and dry hopped to provide a delicate carbonation and complex flavor. Doesn't that sound good? And, you know, I'm talking to people that love their craft brews because it's all about, you know, the complexity of it and that pale ale fresh finish. It's amazing. It's the Hawaiian Pale Ale from Spearhead Brewing Company. Pick them up at your LCBO. Delicious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, now that was a lovely segment on Humble and Fred Radio. Shall we do more? Let's.
Yeah.
Welcome. Welcome, people. It's the old prospector. And Snappy Pete. Yeah.
You know, yeah. I didn't tell you this. When I was away one day, I was having a conversation with the regional, your new girlfriend.
Oh.
And
now it's girlfriend.
I've said girlfriend before.
No, it was just friend before. Before the break. When we went holidays, it was just my friend.
Easy there.
No, it's
special
true.
Easy there, special prosecutor.
Well, I'm so excited for you.
Easy there, Freddie Mueller.
Nothing like new love.
Mm-hmm. We're having a discussion about, you know, it's strange because, you know, she's closer to my age than, say, the last paramour. And one day we're talking about the old Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cool because, you know, she remembers a lot of the same things I do.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got onto a discussion of some long-running television shows. And I said to her, the longest-running television show before The Simpsons was a show called Gunsmoke.
Hmm.
And I wondered if you remember that show. Because it was the longest-running television program. It
yes,
ran
I do.
for 20 years. And there was Miss Kitty.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Festus, which is really one of the worst names for a character.
Uh-huh.
He was Festus.
Uh-huh. Made you think of Fester.
And but I couldn't remember the sheriff's name. And I haven't looked it up, but I wonder if you can. Isn't that weird that I remember Miss Kitty and Festus, and I remember that it was on, but didn't you not watch that?
All the time. Mostly in reruns, though.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about that the other day, is how time escalates or whatever. Like, when I would have watched Gunsmoke and syndication, because it was one of those shows that after they had stopped making it, it would be on, like, mid-morning or something, you know, on some channel. But that would have only been 5 or 6 years removed from it actually being on television as a current thing. And now you look back, it's got to be 40, 50 years ago, right?
First episode, September 10th, 1955.
Yeah.
This is the last episode.
Or 60 years ago.
March 1975.
Yeah.
Who was the Marshal? Marshal Matt Dillon.
Right. Played by
James Arness.
James Arness, yeah.
Yeah, there was Miss Kitty and Doc Adams. No mention of Festus. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome, everybody.
I get the same feeling. And we were talking about this a few weeks ago, which was Bonanza.
Mm-hmm.
And for some portion of time, I don't know, in syndication or something, it was called Ponderosa.
Yes, it was Ponderosa.
And how bizarre that.
Why was that?
I don't know if it was a syndication thing or what. It was never called Ponderosa when it was current.
But remember how the show began? It had the burning map?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It said Ponderosa instead of Bonanza. You know what? I've thought about that for years, and now with the Google, I should actually look one day and see why.
Yeah.
Why was it referred to as Ponderosa?
You could probably find that out in
seconds.
Well, why don't you try?
Okay.
And while you do that, I'll sing the Ponderosa theme.
You know what I watch often now in syndication, too?
Higgins!
Magnum P.I.
That's funny.
I love that show.
Really?
Higgins.
Oh, yeah. I love that show.
I don't know if I could sit through an episode of regular old television now. How is it, regular old TV?
It's pretty good.
Is it?
But I mean, I don't do that. It's mostly when I'm away. Because, you know, American cable, they just have tons of those channels.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Of just old American sitcoms and everything. We have a couple. I don't even know if I subscribe to TV Land or that stuff now. I couldn't even tell you.
Right.
It's when you're on vacation and you're just sitting around and you know, when you always test out the TV to see what you
sure.
get.
And
you
take a lap or two.
You get more on antenna in the States because they're allowed to multi-channel. So one television station can offer several signals.
Yeah. I don't remember being, I mean, I wasn't a regular watcher of that show, but what I meant by regular old TV is kind of what we were discussing just before the show started, how there's so many great shows and people are always saying, oh, you got to watch that show. But it's not just there are good shows. It's the style that they're made nowadays.
You know, and before the show started, you were talking with Kyle, producer Kyle.
Kyle!
About yet another show that, oh, you gotta watch it, it's the funniest thing ever, which you hear a lot. Remember it used to be, you know, there was half a dozen channels, and the focus for a community might be one or two shows.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody watched those one or two shows.
Used to be Dallas in the day.
Yeah.
You know, at one point it was, you know, must-see Thursday night Cheers and Seinfeld. Plus, and all you, that stuff.
If
Friends.
If you were a rock fan, you know, albums were spread out.
Yeah.
Be it the new Led Zeppelin, the new Beatles album, that's going back into the 60s or whatever. Fleetwood Mac, that new album. Now, can you? How do you even keep up with that stuff? On a daily basis, there's stuff released that everybody's excited about.
Let's take this call, and then I have a theory about that.
Okay, I like your theories.
And I have a recommend off something that I just yet another service. Hi, who's this?
Hey, it's Ray in Toronto.
Ray! Hi, Ray.
I was just calling. I remember Gunsmoke and Bonanza. I think, Fred, what you were seeing, the name of the ranch on Bonanza was the Ponderosa. I don't think they ever called the show Ponderosa.
Oh, yeah, they did.
They did, yes.
Yes, they did. Yeah, and I think, I'm going to look into it. I think it was some quirky, probably syndication thing. When it came back, they had to change the name or something.
It was because they released two series of episodes. So they would air shows as Ponderosa in the day and then as Bonanza in the evening.
Is that what you found out?
Right.
You know what? That's probably why. Not to confuse people in the early days of syndication.
Right.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Because I also heard it was there's a third time when they ran it. It was known as the Unforgivables. Ray.
Yeah.
You're a good boy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of old TV. Like, I'm 46, so I was a kid when Gunsmoke went off the air. My dad used to watch it quite a bit, so I do remember that one. And, you know, a lot of shows I watched when I was a kid, though, don't hold up very well at all.
Well, it's kind of what I was thinking about. Excuse me. When Fred mentioned Magnum P.I. and those shows, I used to love those shows like Mannix and Rockford Files. But I wonder now, looking back on it, would it hold up, considering how gritty television is now?
Well, last winter, Vision TV... and now I'm going to forget the name of it. The guy in the little car, Peter Falk. Vision
Columbo.
TV. Columbo. Every night at 8 o'clock ran Columbo's. And I'm telling you, I found myself every night, oh, Columbo's on.
Because, me too. I love Columbo. 90s, they used to run those on A&E all the time.
Yeah. And they hold up pretty good. As cheesy and corny as they are.
It goes back to the writing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and... You know, there's other shows that I loved as a child, like Dukes of Hazzard and the A-Team, and now you try and watch them, and oh my God, they're just so bad.
Ray, drive safely. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks.
All right.
You want to talk about cheesy?
Yeah.
Remember Dragnet?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, geez. Remember, like...
Dun, 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 dun.
How long were you here? Did you see anybody leave?
Yeah, it was one of those.
Did you touch anything?
It was one of those shows where, you know, everyone was in black and white.
No, they were color towards.
Were they?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember. No, the reason I asked you about Magnum is once in a while when you do see shows like that. Like, I loved Columbo, but I wonder if I watched it now, considering just not just the grittiness of modern television, but you know the way it's shot and the dialogue's different now. And
well, what I liked. And I watched a few Seinfelds because it was on in the morning when I was away. So when I get up, one of the guys had it on. You know what was great? And maybe Seinfeld's a bad example. What I appreciate about those, especially those old sitcoms, it was 22 minutes of one-liners. Usually pretty funny if it was a good, show.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really sexual. Nothing really off-color. You know what I mean? That wasn't easy. Like, today, a lot of laughs and sitcoms and everything come from sort of suggestive things, which I would imagine makes it a bit easier. But some of those shows were just, like completely wholesome and funny.
Yeah, Seinfeld
That's
will
very
be...
very artful.
Well, Seinfeld more so, I think. There was a lot of suggestive stuff on those shows, like Friends and things, but I think...
I'm talking before that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But Seinfeld will hold up based on how brilliant the writing is. I mean...
No, I'm talking Andy Mary and Dick Van Dyke and all those ones back in those days. That's why I can watch those all day long.
And what I was going to say about Seinfeld, one of the things I like about that show is not only was it super clever, but there was none of that cloying, like at the end somebody hugs and learns a lesson. Mm-hmm. Like their motto was no hugging, no learning. Like it wasn't like how a lot of sitcoms eventually start, you know, wrapping up the storyline by somebody learning a lesson.
Full House Family
Matters.
You
know that thing? Well, a lot of them did that. Yeah. Where they, the main person who was in conflict at the end, that all wraps up nicely. Where Seinfeld was like, nope.
Right.
Just going for laughs. And nobody learned anything.
This is Humble and Fred.
I'm Philip Pong. Thanks so much for listening. The Best of Humble and Fred is brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Strain Print, HomegrownKits.ca, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Gig Sky. And we broadcast from the Humble and Fred National Broadcast Center. We've got more Humble and Fred online, HumbleandFredRadio.com.